Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong, profitable impact on your business.
Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and today I am honored to welcome Peter Atherton to the show, and our topic is reversing and avoiding burnout as an entrepreneur and business owner. Peter is the president and founder of Actions Prove, LLC, and he is the author of Reversing Burnout, How to Immediately Engage Top Talent and Grow, and it's a blueprint for professionals and business owners. I actually have the book open on my iPad right now. In this episode of Your Partner in Success Radio, we are going to discuss, as time permits, the reasons why burnout, disengagement, and career pivoting are so prevalent today, the burnout disengagement cycle, how our work and our life seasons can both complement and conflict with each other, the common traps and pitfalls that affect many successful entrepreneurs and business owners, the four key relationships that are needed for a full life, and again, if we have time, the R&R 2.0 process that can be used to help entrepreneurs and business owners reverse and avoid burnout and reengage with work and life. Been there, done it. Peter, good morning, and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio.
Good morning, Denise. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, you were introduced to me, I believe, by our mutual friend Adam Homey. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right. I knew I remembered something that was important. So, yay, Adam. So, listen, before we get started, because I know we've got a lot to cover here, is there anything about you that you want people to know, maybe a little bit about your history, how you came to be where you are now, before I start kind of peppering you with questions?
Sure. Well, as far as a brief background, I am a recovering engineer. So I was a practicing civil engineer for 24 years. I say that in jest because I loved my career as an engineer, and I continue to problem solve and design solutions today. But I was focused for over 20 years designing large public infrastructure projects and water treatment facilities, and rose from being a project engineer to one of the major owners in my firm and senior executive group leader and member of the board of directors for 13 years before I made the decision to pivot away a few years ago. And I absolutely loved what I did for so many years. But as I was approaching the peak, so to speak, the peak of my career in that realm, and it actually began 7 years before I took my last paycheck, I was just feeling a change that, a level of discontent that, I knew I didn't want to do this for the rest of my working life. And there was a gap between, sort of the life I had and the one that I wanted and the work I was doing and the impact I wanted to have. So that, and eventually I grew the courage to pivot away. But that was a process in and of itself. And I know that I'm not alone because there's so many other high-achieving professionals and business owners and entrepreneurs that I spoke to at the time and have, dozens more since, and sort of feeling the same way, that there's just, so there's a feeling of feeling burnt out and that something's off, and, we want more than just sort of a level of traditional success. And that's, and I say when I speak in front of groups that I still do civil engineering. It's just, instead of projects and infrastructure, it's people and organizations, and instead of in the civil part that I deal with are actual people now, not just the projects for civilization.
And, this happens among the solopreneur crowd as well. It's happening to me. It has been for a couple of years. I've been in my industries. I belong to two industries, if you will. One is web development, and the other one was the virtual assistance industry, and I burned out big. And it took me the longest kind of time to admit it to myself. And while I still do a lot of social media marketing for my clients, I've moved away largely from the whole virtual assistance arena and doing more online business management, which is a whole different level of work. But because I was making such good money and I was, you know, working at such a high level, I held on to that a lot longer than I was really comfortable with. But when I let it go, it's like, whew, now I can move into something that I'm a lot more engaged with and a lot more comfortable and excited about. So I think it happens to most of us at some point. But you're right, it can take forever to say, you know what, this kind of sucks. I don't want to do this anymore.
Right,
for so many
right.
reasons,
and
whether, you know, the money is good, whether your clients love, whatever it is. But I finally just said, I'm done.
Right, and it's interesting that a lot of, you know, high-achieving professionals are very much like solopreneurs just because of the way they sort of have their craft. And there's a lot of loneliness in some professions, too. I mean, there's a lot of working with teams. But I definitely know that from the solopreneur community that, you know, burnout is a real thing. And really, it's, you know, there's a lot of different elements, as you mentioned, and ultimately, you know, one sort of common element is that loss of efficacy for what we're doing right then and there. And that's really, you know, I feel like what I'm doing, I don't have a passion for it anymore. I don't love it. I'm not feeling like it really matters. And that, you know, is a tough place to be because there's different traps that are evident in that. It's, you know, trap of comfort, money, and momentum. Like, how am I going to change now? But, I mean, a lot of that loss of efficacy, you know, one of the major contributing factors is this prolonged work overload that leads to exhaustion and burnout. And that's usually a factor with a lot of the solopreneurs and the entrepreneurs and a lot of, frankly, the professionals and the, even the larger organization business owners. It's just, there's never anything that we shouldn't be doing or is on our to-do list. But the second element, because there's really kind of three major elements, the second one is we just outgrow the work. You know, we've mastered it, we've done it, we might be making money at it, but we need a new challenge or we need to be refreshed and look at it from a new perspective. And that business could have certain growth cycles. And then, you know, the third element, which is somewhat related, but it's a little different, is we enter different work and life seasons, you know, as in our interests mature and they change. And, you know, what we wanted at the age of 25 is different than 35, is different than 45, is different than 55. And so, you know, we're just going to change as our seasons change. And, you know, many people aren't aware of that. I mean, I certainly wasn't aware of it until I took the time to really document the process and put together the book, because we lose awareness of things really in our busyness. And all of a sudden, a decade goes by, and we're trapped. And so, you know, and as the engineer in me, I had to figure out why. You know, like I couldn't just accept that it happened. I needed to know why did this happen, and take it one step further. What could have prevented it? And how could I have re-engineered my love of my former career and the love of my former industry, in practicing it, not just kind of working with folks in it now.
And I'm so glad you brought all that up because I had actually written this down to ask you about or comment on one of the things that when I realized that there was no challenge for me. I mean, I was at the top of my game. I'm one of the highest paid virtual assistants around. I mean, you have to really want to work with me to pay my fees. And I hated it. I just got to the point where there's no challenge. I knew everything, which sounds a bit arrogant, but I really did. I mean, it was just a matter of, you know, keeping up with technologies and making sure that, you know, what might have worked yesterday was still going to work today. But there was really nothing new for me to learn, and I wanted to go more into helping my clients market and, you know, get their voices out there with podcasting and writing books. And, you know, I just switched. And it took me the longest kind of time. I kept having these talks with myself, but Denise, you're making good money. You're comfortable. And, you know, there came a point where I stopped. If I had, you know, had a client lost because of attrition, I had a couple that retired, I didn't replace them. And that hurt my income. And I had to sit and think, do I want to replace them? Do I want to keep running down that rabbit hole And the answer was, no, I did not. So I just tightened up and sucked it up and kept on moving. Sometimes you just have to do that.
Right. And I mean, growing, the need to continually grow is important individually. It's important organizationally. If somebody, you know, even a solopreneur has a team, or, you know, people direct reports, you know, if the organization is growing. I mean, as far as employee engagement, one element is to always have growth. And, you know, for the first part of our adult life, or the first part of our careers, I mean, that growth is professional growth. It's mastering a craft. It's making a name. It's building a platform. It's earning an income to support ourselves and support our family. And that is absolutely, you know, the path for so many people. But then after I've mastered my craft and made a name and been successful, then what? And sometimes that growth, professional growth, has come at a personal cost. You know, I haven't invested in other aspects of my life, and there's a time that, you know, we need to catch that up, or we need to move on to new professional ventures. And, you know, I know when I had reached that point, you know, I was, you know, sort of, it was a little upsetting, but it was more annoying. Like, how can I have 20 plus years as a very successful engineer, understanding systems, finally really knowing what I'm doing? I can do what I used to do in 60 hours and 30 hours, and, you know, had a great team and knew how to hire, knew how to develop. And all of a sudden it was like, why, you know, this is such a waste. And I remember, like, just going through that process of, no, it's there's a process to sort of figure out, I have transferable skills. There are still some things as building blocks for the next venture that are in this. And, you know, who's to say the decision we made possibly in our late teens or early 20s, when, you know, folks may or may not have gone to college but invested in a career, who's to say that that decision I made as an 18-year-old is going to last 50 years? I mean, because it's, you know, it's like working from 20 to 70, if that's today the modern era working period, of course we're going to change. We're going to have these growth cycles. And, you know, when I was going through the process, I was a little bit of a book on tape, you know, junkie, if you will, as far as leadership books and business books, you know, back in the day with the cassette in the car, or, you know, walking around with a CD player, you know, when I was, you know, actually took the time to have lunch. But, you know, and I would just, you know, move through and have to learn. But, you know, one of the books, when I was going through my transition, I said, something is different here. This is a life transformation. You know, one of the books that I read that was particularly, you know, helpful to me was a book written by Bob Buffers called Halftime. And, you know, in that book, he went through this, you know, we're sort of over-prepared for the first half of our adult life and under-prepared for the second half. And in that, he, you know, talked about the sigmoid curve, and it intrigued me, being from a technical background, because I, you know, I could think back to ninth grade biology, and I knew from our treatment plant with biologies and stuff that, you know, what the sigmoid curve was. It's sort of a slanted S, and it's in the shape of an S, and basically it's like all life forms and human phenomena follows the shape of this S curve. And, you know, you sort of start off and you dip down a little bit, and it's learning and development. And then there's this sort of, you turn the corner and you start growing up the S, and then, but at some point you mature and you peak, and then you sort of come down off the top of the S, and that's the sigmoid curve, or the S curve. And it was sort of that defined that season of my life. That was the my first half career. And it was okay. Finally, it was okay to say, you know what? It was a great ride. I grew, I peaked, and it started declining, and now I need the refresh. I need to start a new curve. And that is a relief to so many people I talk to, if I'm working on an individual basis or working with a leadership team, the fact that, you know, businesses, you know, Apple does product cycles all the time, and they cycle, they refresh into a new product line, or they shift from, you know, an iPod to an iPhone, and, you know, and so it's a normal phenomena. And, you know, we're not, just because we're working harder today than we probably ever have and have so many distractions and consumed, we're still humans, we still follow the same cycle.
It's so interesting that you're mentioning books on tape. I listen to a lot of Audible business books when I'm working. Never fiction. I want to read the fiction, but If it's a business book, I can listen to it while I'm building a website. But what you were talking about, the CD player, a couple of weeks ago, I did two back-to-back interviews with Nathan Schulhoff. He invented the MP3 player. Fascinating conversation. So you just never know what's going to come up in when you're chatting with someone, do you?
Right. Yeah. Anyway. I mean, that's one thing, you know, just being able to connect with people and just find out what people are really passionate about today and what they did in the past and how they're leveraging that moving forward is pretty phenomenal. And just to the last point, I mean, people just don't necessarily realize that it's okay to make a change and to leverage the past. It's also okay to take a time out and refresh things and continue on the path. We don't give ourselves the ability to, you know what, it's time for a break. It's even take a sabbatical. But really do things differently. Don't just sit on the beach, which is absolutely something you might physically need for a while, but you know, we got to transition and sort of restore and refresh, you know, mentally also.
Well, and here's the thing, and, you know, going back to what you were talking about, you make a decision in high school, what college you're going to go to, what your major is going to be, what your minor is going to be. If anybody were to tell me that I would grow up to have a computer science degree, I would have laughed myself probably, you know, so hard that I threw up on them. I would have never, ever considered myself to be a techie nerd, but I am, by golly. So who knows? But what I think a lot of people are really coming to realize is that life is, it's ebb and flow. You're in flux all the time. And your interests change. Your passions change. You know, your palate changes. Everything changes. Sometimes you just need to recognize it, address it, and just go with it. And I think more and more people are going, you know, I don't want to be a high school teacher the rest of my life. I don't want to work for AT&T. I've got stuff I can share. I can teach other people. I can, you know, I'm a wonderful quilter. I can teach quilting classes. And people are finding, I think, this is just an observation. I don't have any data that proves it or disproves it. But it occurs to me that people are taking what used to maybe be hobbies and building really nice businesses around them because they're coming out of that, I have to work a 9-to-5 forever and ever. I have to stay in my degree field. You know, they're going, no, I don't. What do you think?
Right. Well, I mean, it's sort of, you know, what is a great job? A great job is something that day in and day out, you doing something that is purposeful, meaningful, and that, you know, you just have a passion for. Or it's a job that allows you on the side to do something that you has gives you meaning and purpose and that you have passion for. And it's not, it's nice to be able to line up and say what I earn my, you know, what I can pay the mortgage with is also something that really drives my passion and really is my purpose here. But that's not going to be the case. I mean, when people reach certain points of life, I think ideally, our best brand is an integrated life, but at the same time, you know, I know a lot of people, you know, I've coached them, and for about a decade, this was me, you know, when I knew my passion wasn't what I was good at and earning a paycheck at, you know, I developed a parallel life, you know, in the nonprofit world, and we did a lot of, you know, we built a lot of infrastructure and did a lot of education programs and eventually built a social enterprise farm in a developing country all on the side. That was my form of side hustle. It was in the nonprofit space. It wasn't, I mean, I guess that was a hobby for me, but when I knew that my occupation as it was, my skills and talents that I learned from the time I went to school, and once it was my sort of whole world work world, when I knew it didn't, I didn't just be, you know, glum about it. I went out and I tried different things to say maybe this could instill my passion for my field. And I leveraged a lot of those skills and talents. So, you know, I see that a lot. And it is, you know, can you adapt the job to be in line with things that you love or, you know, not just your skills and talents, but your gifts, you know, things that you might have not discovered either. You discovered that I have this gift for teaching or I have this gift for writing. I never knew that before. You know, so can you morph the job to do that or could you continue to do what you do well, you know, give it its credence, but I mean, after 10, 20, 50, you know, 25 years, you're probably pretty good at it, and you can do it in less time, and it affords you the opportunity to work and try to put a business around or a little bit more, you know, formality around a hobby. And that is a huge thing, and that's actually a very positive step before anyone would pivot away from something. It's, you know, do a series of, you know, walk through that process of kind of restoring. If you're feeling burnt out and disengaged, and you've got to kind of restore some things and then rediscover, you know, things about you, things that you didn't know, sort of track your history, enjoy what you've accomplished. Because, you know, as high-achieving folks, you know, entrepreneurs, solo entrepreneurs, we're on to the next thing. We have a victory, and all of a sudden it's next. You know, that's not going to pay the bill tomorrow. Like, that was, you know, and so we forget some of the things that we've accomplished, and, you know, kind of go through a process to rediscover that, figure out what is transferable, and then we can start retargeting and sort of revitalizing some things. But, you know, having, you know, being able to work in hobbies and, you know, figure out things from either a paid or an unpaid side hustle, I think it is super healthy, and people are desiring that today. I mean, it's really, we're not one-trick pony, so to speak.
No, very much so, and I'm seeing more and more of it. And what I'm hearing from you, and I really like this, is that you can do both. You can, you know, complement one with the other, or you can just say, okay, I'm not going to do this anymore. I don't like it. But what I'm hearing you say, or maybe I'm reading between the lines, is that you can do it with, you know, with a very thoughtful manner. You know, you can have plans, you can set goals, you can say, okay, you know, this is what I want to do. I want to transition from my 9-to-5 job, and this is how I'm going to do it. And it may be that you have to create a minor or major business plan that takes 3 or 4 or 5 years, but you're not just going, I don't need that paycheck anymore. I'm going to go have a quilting circle. I don't even know why that comes into my head. I can't quilt. But, you know, I do see people go, I'm done. I'm just going to quit. And then they're on GoFundMe because now they can't pay for their dog food, which is, you know, exaggeration, but you know what I'm talking about. But I agree with you if you say, look, I want to do something different, and I've been doing this all along, so now I'd like to turn it into a business, but I am not going to throw everything up in the air and default on my mortgage just because I have a bug. Is that kind of what I'm hearing?
Right. No, I mean, that's not, you know, it in some way that's irresponsible. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you, and it's, you're not going to be able to leverage into the next venture by just, you know, cold turkey. I mean, there's obviously events that happen. But from my perspective, you know, as an engineer type myself who, you know, likes to plan things out, I mean, that's just the way I'm wired. And also coaching people through, you know, it's always going to be best to make a plan and but take action to move things forward, because our first plan is never going to be the final plan. I mean, it won't be, and there's a lot of emotion. And, you know, I just, you know, some of the reasons why, you know, things that are going on today is, you know, for people who are solopreneurs and building a business, and even if, you know, someone's on a professional track, I mean, the reason why, you know, burnout exists is it takes the same commitment to succeed and excel as it always has. And that's just the reality is, to be successful, to start a business and be successful at it, it takes 10, 20, 25 or more years to master that craft, make a name, and build a platform. It's all in for a season or two. I mean, that's just what it takes to be excellent. And the difference today, which I think is different, and it's been different over the last 20 or 30 years, and it really, so it affects people who are, you know, 40 to 50 plus years old today, who the work world has just dramatically changed. And so, you know, we have the same commitment that we have to be good and excel, provide value, be compensated for that value. But what's different today is work is so much more consuming, in that we're constantly and we're most often overconnected. There's an unrelenting pace today. We're always reminded of the things that are on our to-do list, the priorities of the priorities, and there's a longer list of what we should do. And there's this unrelenting expectation to perform on all fronts all the time. And that it's just, it's constant busyness, and that's where we lose track of, you know, we lose touch, track, and clarity of our lives, and that leads to that sort of emotional place that we feel like we're missing out and we're super frustrated because, you know, as all this is happening, as we have to work hard to excel, work is dramatically changed on us, and we haven't caught up to the technology. Technology and social media, all that is democratizing how business is. It's so much positive stuff, but we haven't caught up as, we haven't changed as humans, and we haven't figured out, a lot of us, how to own the technology to make it work for us all the time. So we're, you know, a lot of times we're struggling with that. But the other piece is, I think as a society, we're just shifting. Our expectations of work and life is shifting. You know, we want to succeed in both. You know, there's not a lot of honor in being successful in one aspect and letting the other ones fall apart. That maybe 20 years ago, that was sort of a little bit of a badge of honor, but it's not anymore. And people don't want that. And so people are looking for something more and something different from work. And, you know, with some understanding of, you know, our work season and our life seasons change, and, you know, sort of, you know, the millennials entering in the workforce and probably saying things that we feel and maybe didn't have the guts to pull off, or the Gen Xers finally coming into power and saying, you know, hey, we want to be able to make a little bit more of a difference in the way we look at work, and, you know, we're not going to use the 1980 styles of leadership and management. You know, all that is just, it's a thing, you know, people who are stuck in a track of the past are yearning for that. So we have all these different elements moving forward, and that leads to the emotion, and people without a method, a process to work through individually. Let's go through that, and you mentioned it, you know, that R&R 2.0 process. It's not rest and relaxation anymore. There's too much on the line. There's too much emotion. There's too much mental exhaustion. It's not taking a vacation that's going to solve that. We need to walk through that process. And then as an organization, I mean, if you have employees, the leaders are feeling this, but all your top talent is feeling it too, and you want to engage them. You want to move them along also because you want them to stick around. You don't want them leaving. And so there's, you know, I walk through, you know, this process with organizations, but it always comes back to the individual, the leadership team, feeling burnt out also, and then trying to understand that, you know, burnout process so we don't make emotional decisions. There's certainly a big driver, and ultimately, you know, it's going to be some level of emotion that gives us that courage to take that final step into something new. But there's a lot at play, and some of it is because we just don't understand the elements that are causing us to feel this way, and then what we can push back on and what we can sort of work ourselves out of.
Okay, what is the R&R 2.0? What is that process? Can you give us some steps or, you know, something we can make a list with?
Yes. So really what that is it's a four-part process. It's a restoration phase, followed by a rediscovery phase, followed by a retargeting phase, followed by a revitalization phase. And so, you know, the restoration comes from, I need some time to sort of think through why I feel the way I do. And in fact, I just wrote a blog on this, a blog series kind of outlining some more detail on the R&R 2.0 process. But, you know, one of them is our daily PTO, not personal time off, but our daily personal time out. And that could be anything from 15 minutes a day to an hour a day where we just, you know, we take time for ourselves. We decide we're valuing ourselves and we're valuing our time, and we're going to just start journaling, you know, writing what concerns me about work, what concerns me about my relationship with family and friends, what concerns me about my finances, what concerns me about my personal growth and development, what concerns me about my connection or lack of connection with others. And you just start kind of writing down the issues, and you kind of go through that process. But in that restoration phase, the major element is creating margin, that 15 minutes to 30 minutes to an hour a day. And I started off with just taking 15 minutes without my phone, and then eventually grew to almost an hour a day, that that it took me to restore and really understand what's happening. And a lot of that was, it wasn't just journaling. That was my time when I was reading books. That was my time where I would start listening to podcasts when they became, you know, more popular. But that restoration is, margin is foundational to that restoration piece. The rediscovery happens, you know, in that margin time where, you know, we're looking to sort of master our past and master our present, you know, where, you know, it can be that you rewrite your resume for the first time in 15 years. Like, what have I accomplished? How do I look to myself? You know, what is my brand to others? Ask people what they feel. You can develop a personal S-curve. Like, how has my career, am I learning and developing? Am I growing? Am I peaking? Am I past that? Why? So it's that sort of rediscovering a lot about yourself and how people think of you. And then that just, again, you're still using margin time, just transitioning into, well, retargeting. Like, you know, I want to do something more work-wise. I want to do something more with my relationships with friends and family. I want to do something more in the community. I want to do something more. I want to reach a different level in my finances. I want to have more personal growth and development. I've left that. I haven't done that. And ultimately, that's going to help us do business. Like, all of these things are going to help us in business. They're going to help us with connections with people. And it's really moving towards having a full life. And, you know, as a high achiever, that was my problem. And it's a problem of so many people. We just invest so much because work demands it. Our business demands it. People are counting on us. And we really never look at some of those other aspects that would give us the full life and make us better at our craft when it's all said and done. And the final, once we restore, rediscover, begin to retarget some things, and we're still living our life. We're just taking margin and thinking through a process here to where we might want to be. The last step is just to revitalize by taking some steps, having the courage to do a little bit more with that hobby, volunteer for something, make the time. I want to connect more with my community. We're having date night with my spouse. I'm taking my daughter to ice cream every Thursday after school. I'm going to make that important decision to build that relationship. And it's little steps, but you start revitalizing. And through that process of revitalizing, you might feel like, you know, I want to do something different in my work. But through that process, if you're taking little steps, maybe you could restructure the business a little differently to do something that you really feel passionate about. And you can outsource, eliminate, or delegate some of those things that you really don't love anymore, but they were essential, but you don't need to do them anymore. And so, you know, or if you're working for an organization, you know what, I can do what I just don't want to do this aspect, but you know what, I can move to a different department, or I can start developing these skills. I want to do this now. And so you don't, but as you walk through that process, and again, for me, and I didn't have this process. I mean, this is me going back and saying, what did I actually do over the last 7 years to get me to the point where I knew wholeheartedly what I wanted to do, and I have the courage to walk away from an extremely lucrative career that I could have stayed in for a decade or more on autopilot. I mean, I wouldn't have because that's just my nature, but I could have, and I didn't. I wanted to just do something different, but it was through that process. So that's a little bit, again, it's like, oh, go take a break, go take a vacation. Well, that's not going to cut it if someone's really feeling burnt out and really feeling that something is just off and they really want to do more and they don't know where to start.
And see, I love this whole process, and I find that, I think we all notice this or know it on some level. What you think about is what you take action on, right? Or, you know, it really starts, reasons why you should take action start to pop up. So I'm a firm believer, if I focus on something and I bring it into my reality on a very regular basis, kind of like Earl Nightingale, you know, the 30-day, there's this great YouTube video, you have this 30-day challenge. If I have decided that I'm going to take action or bring something into my life or create something or share something, I actually will, you know, I have index cards, I love them. You know, as techie as I am, I still want pen and paper and index cards. and I will take an index card and I will write down what that primary thought of the day is for 30 days. And I may switch it up a little bit the next day because yesterday I took action and I created something, so now I'm going to switch it up a bit. But it all goes back to that primary thought. And I find that the more I think or consider or contemplate on something, the more it comes into very clear focus for me.
And that's
just a pattern that I have developed over time.
And I love that. I mean, that's just similar to you're able to have that thought process because it's, you know, however you're doing it is probably just some sort of a margin time to think through. And, you know, even to this day, I mean, I have my time. I mean, it could be 15 minutes a morning, could be an hour, depending on, you know, kind of what the day looks like. And it's maybe not every day, it could be 5 days a week, but it's, you know, what do I need to accomplish today? What do I want to do this month, this quarter? Am I making progress on my annual plan? And it's just so I can strategically think during that. One of the shifts I made, and I love what you had said about I need to see it in order to take action. And, you know, I shifted my, you know, when I was going through my transition phase or my transformation phase, I had that endless to-do list, and it was all work-related. And, you know, maybe at the end of it was, oh, yeah, I need to call, you know, something because the something's broken in the house. But it was all work or things that I needed to do. And I changed it. I made it, you know, and I called it something different. It was my to-be list. And instead of a one page, you know, like that went to the next page, I made basically two columns and three rows. So it was basically six boxes. And I just said, okay, one of the box was work. One of the box was family and friends. One was where am I on my personal financial plan? Because in order for me to pivot, I knew I needed to be responsible to my family about, you know, what it is that, you know, I was a provider and that was my job. So I needed to have, you know, my financial goals like right there. And that meant at seasons working harder because it was going to allow something later on. So that was the third box. And then I did have my personal growth and development. I couldn't forget about that. I had my, you know, how I wanted to connect with others, you know, outside of my products and services and outside of my, you know, immediate family. I wanted to connect in my community again. And then the last box was just the miscellaneous things like, oh yeah, I need to mow the lawn. Oh, I need to order bark mulch. You know, like what those things that I didn't want to lose track of either. But, and it helped me. I need to take steps in all these areas to be the person I want to be the leader. I want to be the husband and the father. I want to be the friend I want to be. I needed to act in all of these, maybe not all at once, but I needed to see them all on one sheet.
And see, that makes sense for me. Who has filing cabinets anymore? I mean, seriously, I have one. It's a big, tall, four-drawer metal filing cabinet that is stuck in a corner of my office closet. And it's a storage unit, nothing more or less. It is not a filing cabinet. And not too long ago, I ran out of paper. I mean, I used my last composition notebook. I was in a total freak out. It's like I carry those around the house with me. I had no printer paper. I actually was like, oh, my God, now what am I going to write on? I need to be able to write on something. So for some reason, I went into my office closet, and I opened it up, and that top drawer is just packed full of manila folders. Aha. I grabbed a handful of those, and first page, you know, big marker, this is for this particular project. Open it up, and I started jotting things down. Now I've got this very cool stack of manila folders where I can just open it up, write something down, cross it off, but I'm like you, I can see it. I can see where I started. I can see where my progress is. I can instantly, because I did grids, same thing. What do I need to do? What has to happen? Why am I doing, you know, whatever it was that particular project or thought or goal, personal goal, whatever it was. And I am loving these folders. In fact, when I run out, I'm probably going to buy another box of them. I mean, who knew? Instead of giving them away or throwing them away, I decided to utilize them. And you know what feels good to me about these things? They're hefty. They're strong. I can stand them up next to something and view it. You know, it's really interesting how much these things have allowed me to focus. Instead of flipping through pages in a notebook or trying to find something on my phone, I just grab the folder. It's clearly marked, and it's all laid out for me. Inside, both, you know, both inside pages, front and back, I've got grids, I've got notes. It's, I don't know, it works for me, but I have to see it. I have to be able to track it. So those work for me. So that's my productivity tip for the day. Get out those little manila folders and scribble on them. They're fun.
I'm
okay.
Extremely visual.
Go ahead,
person
I'm
myself.
Sorry.
No,
yeah,
I'm an extremely visual
I
person
see
myself.
It. Yeah, I can't just kind of, we're too busy, we're way busy. And I need to be able to actually physically hold it and go, okay, cross it off, cross it off, cross it off. And then after I'm all done with whatever it is, piece of paper, note card, whatever it is, I have this thing, I need to shred it. For me, it's the finality. I did it. I accomplished everything. Or if there was one or two things, those moved to another note or notebook or whatever it is. But there's something very cathartic for me about just shredding it. It's like, this is done. Moving on. Do you find that, or
see,
is that
the other way?
Am I just nuts?
I'm the other way. So I'm nuts the other way. I when I have a piece of paper that's written all over and I've accomplished things, I almost can't throw it away. I have a drawer full of, you know, but I've accomplished these tasks, but I think I want to look at it again to sort of build my momentum for the next thing. Like, look at this thing. Like, this is almost a work of art with the crossouts and the arrows and the changes.
Yeah.
And the, I can't get rid of
and
that.
The red
so
and green
I,
and blue and purple. Yeah.
I have so many calendars and to-do lists and to-be lists that I feel like I'll look at them again, but I probably won't.
Well, you know how I solved that problem for myself? I have a digital, I guess you would call it, journal. I have a digital journal, and I got it from davidrm.com, and it cost me $49 about 10 years ago. It lives on my computer. I love it because being a techie, I need to be able to look for things by keywords. I need to be able to look for dates. I need to be able to look for phrases. And I'm impatient, and I don't want to have to thumb through all these, you know, pieces of paper. So I will take, at the end of the day, I will open up my journal, and I will put everything in there that needs to be in there. And I can go back years by just a keyword search and find a thought that I had back then. It's fantastic. So that works for me. That works for my particular kind of techie brain. Okay, so I wanted to ask you the four key relationships that you feel are needed for a full life. What are those?
So I sort of stumbled upon this. I mean, my side hustle was really working with a number of people in the nonprofit space, and I became a leader in a group that I was on the founding board of, and basically we took, you know, 2 to 3 service trips a year into the developing world to really serve. And as we progressed in our work, we wanted to, you know, we found that it truly is better to give than receive, and that we were growing and developing, you know, almost at the same pace, or if not more, than the people that we really set out to serve. And it's just this wonderful human experience to realize that, wow, we're all the same. We're all the same, and you have things that I don't have, and we might have things that you don't have, but it's really, it's a little bit of an imbalance, because you're, you know, really more joyful and more contented, and it was a sort of personal metamorphosis for me in just understanding humans. And so as we were trying to get better and learn, you know, we very quickly got to the place where there's such a difference between a relief effort and a rehabilitation effort versus a development effort, and really, you know, what that took. And so we wanted to, you know, in our North American mindset, when we think of poverty, we think of material, you know, it's material poverty. We just 99% of us think of, oh, they don't have stuff. But that is such a, you know, sort of an incomplete definition of what poverty is. And, you know, there's just so many elements to that. And, you know, there were so many pivotal books that we had read, Toxic Charity being one, and Helping Without Hurting being another. And, you know, we had tried to apply those, you know, as we were serving people. We had developed great relationships. And, you know, those four key relationships to address poverty is how we learned of these. But they were 100% adaptable to how we can become full you know, humans. And in the one sense of, you know, we're well connected, you know, here in our community, we're living a full life as people. So what those relationships are, and it works in any type of emotional, spiritual, or material poverty sense to not be there, is, you know, these four key relationships. The one is just to have a positive relationship with ourselves and have that sense of purpose that we're important, we matter, and that we are doing something, you know, in this world. And so that, that self-relationship and sense of purpose. The second element is really to be connected to community, to be connected to others, and have a sense of belonging, that we're just more than just ourselves as individuals. The third element, and that, you know, could, in our day and age, it's sort of investing in our community. It could be coaching, you know, a sport, or it could be on the town council or the parish council, or it could be, you know, getting involved with nonprofit work. So it is that element played out for us, and at least in the North American sense. The third element is the ability to provide for ourselves, to be able to provide for ourselves and our families, to make a career. Is an important element. Nobody wants a hand out. Everyone wants a hand up, and they want to be able to provide. It's just, it's a human element. And the fourth element is just a connection with something greater than ourselves. It's a sense, it's a higher purpose, it's a higher power, you know, that can help give us direction and answers. So relationship with ourselves, a relationship and a sense of belonging with our community, the ability to provide for ourselves, and a connection to a higher power are those full element, those four elements that lead to a full life.
Thank you. Okay, so I wanted to backtrack just a little bit. I think we covered this, but I want to go back over our points to make sure nothing kind of gets, you know, falls through the cracks. The common traps and pitfalls that affect many, many successful entrepreneurs and business owners. I suspect I've hit a ton of them. Can you share? In fact, I know I have. Can you share what some of those are, and, you know, maybe how to pivot around them, or at least recognize them and start working towards solving them?
Right. Some of the big ones for again, you know, high achievers, you know, people who are, you know, are driven by success, you know, in business. The big ones are comfort, money, and momentum. And they're, you know, comfort is a good thing, because from a sense, generally it's a good thing. It's from a sense of comfort we can learn how to take risks. We can take on larger assignments. We can, you know, take on new clients because I'm comfortable that I can pay the mortgage. So now I'm going to venture into new areas. So some level of comfort is good. If we're too comfortable, it's not good, because now we're afraid to take, over time we become a little bit more risk averse. So that is a trap. I've been doing this for 25 years. There's no possible way I can relearn some things now. And maybe it's because they're feeling burnt out and they've lost that efficacy. And I don't think I can take an online class to learn that. I just don't have the energy. I'm physically drained. And so they just, I'm just stuck in comfort. And that's, you know, we've got to back up and look, take a big picture view, and maybe go through the R&R 2.0 process to get out of comfort. That comfort in that sense is not a good thing. So that's a common trap. And burnout plays a role in that. The second element, or the second big trap, is money. We just get stuck with a lifestyle, get stuck into a lifestyle, and, you know, we've earned a lot of what we've done. We've worked super hard for it. We shouldn't necessarily feel guilty about it, but sometimes we've built a lifestyle around, I need to continue to do what I'm doing because then I can't do these things that I expect of myself or other people expect of me, and they're just trapped. And there's so many people who, I can't wait till my last kid gets out of college because then I'm ditching this career. And it's just like, it's not, they're in it for that. Once I pay off that home, once I do this, and it's just, they're trapped. The money, they don't want to be there for so many reasons. But the money is keeping them there. And that's a major issue. I mean, it was a major sort of transition for me when, you know, money turned from my identifier and something that made me feel real good about myself to something that could be a tool that I could use to have a bigger impact. And that doesn't happen overnight. And it's just, it's a mindset. It's a mindset over money. And that's a very powerful draw. But to then move on to the third big element is this momentum piece. And it kind of ties into being comfortable, but you know, the mindset of I can't do something different if I've been doing it this long. I'm really good. This is my network, and I'm just going to continue doing what I'm doing, even though I don't like it. And again, some of that is just, you know, we're just on a trajectory that we feel we've lost control of, and maybe we have to regain the control. We've got to value ourselves and value our time, that it's finite. We don't have tomorrow guaranteed, and that if we don't like our momentum, we need to just start a process, because it's like you can sit back and say, you know, continuing on this track I'm on, where am I going to be a year from now? What about 2 years? What about 5 years? Like, what am I going to be happy at retirement? You know, and so, but momentum is a powerful force, and short of a crisis, we continue on. It's like, why do some of the old, antiquated, tired leadership and management practices continue? Why are 2/3 of American workforce disengaged at work? Why is there a 70% variance on, you know, employee engagement, the relationship with the supervisor? Because everyone's doing the same old thing they used to do, maybe because they're too busy, maybe they don't realize they can do something different, whatever the case is. That momentum is not taking us to a good spot in a lot of senses. So those are the big three traps and pitfalls.
And while you were talking, I was like, ooh, been there, did that one twice, ouch. You know, it's just, you're right, and we just get caught up in the day-to-day stuff. We wake up, we go. You forget to call your mom. I mean, you know, you just get so busy, you get caught up in everything, and then you wake up the next day and you rinse and repeat. That has to wear you out at some point. I mean, that's not sustainable.
Or it numbs us, and we're just disengaged.
Yes.
And we're not living full lives. And, you know, and we could say we're sucking it up for our family. We're sucking it up for this. But those around us know we're unhappy. It manifests in so many different ways. And, you know, all of these things that we're talking about, I live them. You know, so, like, I'm not like, oh, I did research, and I'm telling you what the top research. No, this was my life. Like, I was miserable for a while. And you know, I went through a process. With a lot of, you know, my process was, you know, I lived that parallel life, you know, with my side hustle. That started with a timeout experience with me just experiencing. But, you know, I had a lot of good counsel along the way and some tough love, you know, to get me through these pieces. So, I mean, I know what it's like. And ultimately, my heart breaks for people who are in that spot, who are feeling burnt out, and they've lost control, and they're just kind of moving through unhappy, and it affects everyone around them. You know, my heart breaks for leaders of organizations who they have an organization that is not refreshed, that might need to pivot in a new direction, and they're not leaders in their organization that they should be, because they're feeling burnt out, and the organization suffers, and the industry suffer. So, I mean, but I live this, and so I get it. And it hurts me today just to know, when I talk to someone for the first time, that they're in a tough spot. But it's okay. We can reverse it. It is all reversible.
It really is. And one thing you said that I think is so important, I wanted to bring it up just a bit again, is that, you know, when you're describing people's, oh, when the house is paid for, I'll be happy. When, you know, I get that brand new luxury car, I'm going to be happy. You know what, Peter? I choose to be happy right now where I am. And I'm happy by saying, okay, you know, you can make things better, Denise. You know, let's do this, because I love accomplishment. I love to knock something off my list. I live for it, really. But I used to do this, and I realize it now, that I used to go, okay, when I get this done, or when I have this piece, or I'm going to be happy then. Baloney. I'm going to be happy right now, because I don't know if I won't walk into a tree an hour from now and, you know, concuss myself and fall down. I mean, you just don't know. So I choose to be happy right now with what I have, with what I'm doing, all the while improving. It's the only way I can live now.
Yeah, and that, I agree with that, and I'm in that spot, but 15 years ago I wasn't, and you know my and it gets into our life seasons and our work seasons, and you know what I document in the book is, you know, in general, you know, entrepreneurs, business owners, high achieving professionals, we have four distinct work seasons, and the first one being, and it could take 10 years, you know, master our craft. And then, you know, we're going to shift in for the next 15 years to make a name for ourselves. And so that's kind of like that first, you know, 25 years of our career where, you know, that some of those things, that the material things, I mean, they are, it's the sense of accomplishment. It's providing, you know, that foundation for, you know, taking care of ourselves and taking care of our family. And, you know, I didn't feel guilty about it at the time, but as I changed, as I shifted, you know, once those things, I mean, material things will never satisfy. They will never fully satisfy. They're essential, you know, in a lot of ways, and they're important in a lot of ways, and we put a lot, probably more importance on them than we probably should, but they're never going to fully satisfy. It's those other elements of a full life where we really are going to find joy and contentment in, but they're essential for that first half, so to speak. But then, I mean, once we make a name for ourselves, I mean, we shift into making a difference. We really want to leverage our skills, talents, assets, gifts, and experiences, products, and services to help people make a difference. And so there's a distinct shift in how we think of things as we progress in our careers. And then, you know, ultimately, we want to leave a legacy. We want to invest in the success of others. After, you know, we want to be able to pay things forward. So, you know, it's at any given phase, and that's why it's like sort of understanding our seasons and where we're at is important. And again, what drove me at 25 and 35 is not driving me, you know, later in life. It's, I have different drivers now, a different, you know, intrinsic motivators. But I think that's a very natural process.
Absolutely. Listen, we've only got a couple of minutes left. Where can people find you on the web, and where can they find your book?
So all versions of the book, Kindle, paperback, and just released on Audible, can be found on Amazon, but they're also available, they can link through my webpage and my website, which is actionsprove.com, and I'm pretty active on LinkedIn, also, you know, so on Facebook also, but primarily on LinkedIn, and I post a lot of content there and on my Amazon author page as well as on my website.
Excellent. Okay, before we go, is there anything you wanted to share with our audience that we maybe didn't cover or I didn't ask?
I think we really covered a lot here, and there is a lot. And I think, you know, as it relates to, you know, entrepreneur, I guess the final thing is, you know, we're not alone, you know, as entrepreneurs, as business owners, as high achievers. And I think we can never lose sight of, you know, our need to excel, to be real good at what we do, to provide value. And that is, it's a driver that links us all. But excelling is not what's going to cause burnout. It's a lot of intervening factors. It's frustrations. It's losing, you know, that touch track and clarity of where we are in our lives and in our seasons and, you know, whether we're growing or not. And so excelling is excellent. And that we're not alone, that we fall into, you know, just feeling that something's off. But I think it's healthy. It's discontent. I think that discontent is healthy because it's just telling us something's off. We need to take the time to figure out how to correct it.
I agree. And, you know, I go through that every once in a while, and I'll have to, I probe. I sit down, and it's like poking at a sore tooth. It's like, what's going on here? You know, how bad is this? Do I need to see a dentist, or is there just, you know, something stuck there? What's going on? What am I doing? And if you take the time to sit and relax into it, the answers do come. And they may not come that day, but they will show up if you just keep, you know, what's going on? What am I doing? Where can I find help? Where can I find clarity? You have to explore it. So, Peter, again, thank you so much for being with me here today. It's been a genuine pleasure speaking with you and having you share your the wonderful tips and advice that you've given us. And before we say goodbye, I would like to remind our audience to be sure to look for us in iTunes. Just look for your Partner in Success Radio and take us along on your success journey. Peter, thank you again.
Thank you, Denise.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.